What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, and back again, Jack Manuel. Guys, how are we doing on the Sunday?
I saw Corey Waldron's ugly doppelganger at the Knicks game at MSG, and I'm shook. I'm glad I'm speaking to the real one.
All right, well, maybe it was me. It's low key. I was really intrigued on the Knicks Kings matchup tonight. Guys,
behind the Kings.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, the mistake. I mean, they had a good night finally. But it's a pleasure, guys. Obviously, saw you guys in person earlier this week at the Nets-Pacers game. Talked, 2 days after on this pod, talking again. Always a pleasure talking hoops with you guys.
And as always, you can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass, grab some OTG merch. But guys, let's talk about the Houston Rockets, who just got embarrassed by the Miami Heat tonight, 129-100, 3-3 on the season. James Harden is really struggling, under 40% from the field, under 30% from three. What are your early takeaways from this team who's struggled immensely defensively?
It's funny, in the preseason preview for JBT, Nick, I had the Houston Rockets at fifth, and I know a few people have told me they were a little bit skeptical about that, but I guess it is still very early days, but there are a lot of problems happening in Houston right now. Their offense, I mean, we know what their offense is essentially, but obviously when you lose a guy like Chris Paul, who at least spaces the floor a little bit more than Russell Westbrook, who I think shot like 17% from three tonight, it changes the dynamic of the offense. And obviously, they do have some other floor spaces, but their role players, their bench, their depth, and especially their defense, we got to see it in person. I got to see it in person the other night, and that just the Nets toyed with them. They got any shot that they wanted, and it would just allow them to just do whatever they wanted. And the Miami Heat, what was it, like 42 to 16 at quarter time?
Yeah, it was 46 to 14 after the first quarter.
Oh, man. See, like, I was at the Knicks game, and I was still keeping up with it and following you on Twitter, tweeting stuff out, Nick. I was just like, how can this be happening for a team that a lot of people said would be awesome in the regular season? You know, this is a regular season team. But there's some problems there. And, you know, Mike D'Antoni is on an expiring contract as a coach as well. We know the whole furore with Daryl Morey and Tillman Fertitta, the ownership happening there. Some tough times happening in Houston right now.
Yeah, so obviously the defense is definitely what eye pops, because this team was already a team that won on the strength of their offense. And their defense, though, has certainly taken a step back, it feels. Obviously, James Harden, Russell Westbrook aren't known for the defense. James Harden has definitely shown some improvement in that, at least in years past. But the offense is what is just staggering. You know, Eric Gordon can't hit anything. I mean, this is one of his worst shooting performances. I'm actually okay with Westbrook. Like, funny enough, Westbrook is like the least of the Rockets' problems right now, I think. You know, averaging 21-9-9, shooting 46% from the field, still can't hit threes. But like, if Westbrook is driving and dishing out the guys wide open at the corner, it's not really on him. I look at guys just like Eric Gordon not being able to hit shots. You know, PJ Tucker hasn't been much better. Clint Capella, there's just nothing special there. I'm sorry. You could find a Clint Capella, Jared Allen, not to, like, throw shade. I think Jared Allen is, like, a better version of Clint Capella and younger.
Ooh. Ooh.
So, you're looking at that, and the bench, terrible. And then, the fact of the matter is, James Harden is just not good. He's not a bad player, but he's just not good right now. He's shooting 37% from the field, 21% from three. 2 for 16, I think he was, against the Nets. You know, Jack, I mean, I know you can speak to it more since you saw him in person the other night. Yep. It just feels like he does a step back just because now. Like, not even it's a smart basketball player or to create that much space. It's just to do it. And when you're already shooting such a low percentage, maybe just, like, try and set your feet and take a jumper. Like, maybe don't do the step back. Houston's a mess. I had them as a 5 seed as well going into the year. And obviously I had the Warriors, I think, as a 7 seed. Both those teams, Warriors clearly out. But the Rockets, I mean, this team does not look good right now.
Yeah, the defense is terrible. And you mentioned James Harden. He's just forcing it instead of trying to, you know, run a play here and there or even a pick and roll. Just focusing too much on that step back. But do you guys think they have the components on this roster to fix some of the issues defensively? Or are they just going to be a bad defensive team all year long and they're just going to have to maintain a top five offensive rating?
That's a hard one, Nick. I really am high on PJ Tucker. So, like, I'll argue with Corey a little bit there. Seeing him in person, he has to do so much for that team in a similar way to what Draymond Green, obviously now he's out for a few games with injury, but PJ Tucker does so much. You know, when he switched on to players, you know, he made Karis, I mean, there was one play where Karis made him look a little bit silly, but for the most part, PJ Tucker is one of the best defenders in the league. And, you know, we saw Jrue Holiday last year, Nick, and I'd have PJ Tucker up there as one of the best defenders I've seen in person. But if you have one good defender and four average to below average defenders, if you have James Harden and Russell Westbrook in the perimeter, when the Nets just ran through them, and PJ Tucker can only do so much. You know, like you mentioned, Corey, Clint Capella's doing bugger all. You know, Ben McLemore, Austin Rivers, these guys give you, you know, whatever. So for me, you know, if you have one good defensive player, it's not enough. And, you know, like you mentioned, Nick, they're going to have to be a top three offensive team. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, the Cleveland Cavaliers were one of the best offensive teams. I think 29th or 30th in defensive rating. And we're still able to make the finals. But I think there's a lot of other problems on top of that. You know, they don't have LeBron James, and James Harden missing three after three after three. Maybe he's going to try that one-legged one. We haven't seen it yet.
True.
I mean, the defense isn't getting much better. What are you going to I mean, yes, PJ Tucker is a good defender. This isn't really on PJ Tucker, because one guy in a bad defense, it just blends in. I mean, Austin Rivers, you can expect him to play defense off the bench. I mean, Daniel House Jr., you know, Russell Westbrook is a Steeler bust kind of guy. James Harden is already exerting so much offensively, and you have to imagine he's going to have to exert even more offensively, which takes away from his defensive game. No, if the defense is going to get better, it's going to be because they make some sort of acquisition for, you know, a 3-and-D guy. But right now, this is what you see. This is going to be a Houston team that's going to have to beat teams by scoring more points. Similar, I mean, think about the Wizards game, right, from last week, 159-158. That's going to be like almost the staple of what this Rocket season may look like, is the fact they're going to have to score literally 150 points to beat teams and while giving up like 150 points.
How much do you guys put on D'Antoni for the defensive struggles, or it is mostly on the players?
Well, Jeff Bizdelic is now in New Orleans as an assistant coach there, and they're not doing much defensively. So I think that, you know, when it comes to the defensive side of things, I think Mike D'Antoni, the way he's coached in Houston ever since he arrived there, obviously he empowered James Harden to the nth degree. And it seems to me that the player, and this is a veteran team, so you expect the guys on the floor to be able to execute. So there's not a, there is, I'd be remiss to say if there are many guys, you know, who are 24 and under, I think Clint Capella might be around that age range. So you expect the veterans to sort of step up. I think coaching has little to do with it. When it comes to defensive schemes, they do play a switching style of defense. We know that. They switch everything, if not almost everything. And sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't. They don't have the cattle right now. They lack real wing depth, you know, any sort of twos, threes, or tweeners as well. Again, PJ Tucker can't do it all. And he does so much as well. And, I mean, he hasn't been hitting the corner three as much. It's still his bread and butter. But they need some wings. And, you know, I haven't hated the Ben McLemore signing. I think he's okay. But they need some capable defenders because, you know, when Jeff Bizdelic was rehired last year in the middle of the season, you know, their defense took a real uptick. So right now, there are so many issues on that end of the floor. To let, and I mean, we've spoken about it before, but to let a Washington Wizards team that has Bradley Beal and Thomas Bryant as its second best player score 158 points against you, surely that's a wake-up call. But I guess not.
Now, moving into some other early takes, we've seen a lot of teams get off to a good start. Mainly two of the hottest teams in the league, the Lakers and the Sixers. If you had to say between these two teams, which team are you more confident in maintaining this level of play?
The Sixers, because they're in the East, and I think that they have a more sound defensive structure. I do like the Lakers' defense. I think Frank Vogel, obviously, is a quality defensive coach. It's what he is known for. But I think the Sixers have exceeded expectations. Obviously, Joel Embiid will be back in just a game or so. So for them, I think that they've just got a lot. And, you know, they're getting some production from some other guys. You know, Furkan Korkmaz with an absolute dagger game winner. And then guys like Raul Neto and all these sort of players that are just contributing a little bit where they sort of need it. And obviously Matisse Thybulle is just a defensive beast, you know, being compared to Kawhi Leonard as the best defensive rookie of all time, you know, elite company to be in. So I'd back the Sixers in. I think that they have gone over. I know a lot of people, a lot of commentators are saying that they now have them as the favorite in the East over the Milwaukee Bucks, who are struggling just a little bit. We might get to them, but I think the Sixers right now, just because they are undefeated, and I think the Lakers still have, they're not their fully formed product, And I think the Lakers as well have had one of the easiest schedules, you know, to start the season. To end the season, they're going to be on a heap of a tougher run from their strength of schedule. Whereas I think I saw this on ESPN stats or somewhere that the Sixers have had the second toughest, or if not the first toughest schedule to start the first six or seven games. So for them to be still, you know, undefeated after that, and it's a heck of an effort.
Yeah, I'm going with the 76ers as well. Obviously, they are in the weaker conference, which I think helps them. And also, like, the win last night against Portland, it says a lot just because, you know, think about this, for example. You had Joel Embiid. He's out two games. That, obviously, as we highlighted on the last show, that's a bigger issue for the Minnesota Timberwolves than it is for the Philadelphia 76ers. Because you lose Embiid, Al Horford's your starting center then. And I think we've seen through this point in time, Al Horford's really good. Ben Simmons, even though there's still not a jump shot there, he is definitely a more dominating player on the court, at least to this point in the year. I love the addition of Josh Richardson. Tobias Harris is probably the biggest question mark for me. As you mentioned, Thybulle, Jack, that guy plays fantastic defense. Doesn't even matter if he plays 15 minutes or 20 minutes. He gives you a couple steals and it feels like a block or two a game. And then the bench hasn't been as bad, you know, Korkmaz obviously hitting that big shot last night. So I think the Sixers, I trust just because they have, you know, one star for sure in Embiid, basically a star in Ben Simmons who has some limitations, and then three like borderline all-stars on this team, or two borderline all-stars. So I think I trust Philly more because obviously the Lakers have the two best guys in LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but I just like the Philly starting five, especially in that conference.
Yeah, you guys nailed it. They play in the East, and they also can deal with an injury or an absence better, and they already kind of proved that against Portland, where we see the Lakers without AD or LeBron for a game, there's probably some concern. But Dwight Howard's playing really well for the Lakers, but you guys mentioned the other pieces on Philadelphia, they just have more depth in that starting lineup. But getting to some more Eastern Conference teams, which team is more confident in, Miami Heat or Boston Celtics?
The Miami Heat, because I like their depth, and I back their coaching that little bit more. Eric Spoelstra, I think, is criminally underrated as a coach and is the Eastern Conference version of Greg Popovich. He is just an absolute stalwart. And what he's getting out of some of these guys, Duncan Robinson, Myers Leonard is playing, you know, revitalized basketball in a Miami Heat uniform. You know, Justice Winslow didn't even play tonight. And obviously, we all know about Can You Be My Hero, Baby, Tyler Hero. And then, you know, Kendrick Nunn, who, you know, I respect what he's done. But, you know, I think that it's finally now that he's performing, you know, some of the people are starting to actually look into his past. Obviously, he had to transfer colleges because of a domestic violence case where he had to plead guilty to. So they're just doing a lot of good things. And I really like them. And, you know, I was probably a little bit high-ish on them when I was doing the season preview for JBT. But, you know, if we're talking who's going to be the number three seed at the end of the season, you look at the talent of the Boston Celtics and you probably lock them in. But I think the consistency of this Miami Heat team and obviously the famed Heat culture under Pat Riley, you know, I'd probably go with the Miami Heat just at this early stage. But yeah, it could easily change. You know, we're obviously going to go with some hot takes at this early point of the season.
Yeah, I tweeted this probably an hour, maybe 2 hours ago. I'm all in on Miami Heat being a home court playoff team in the Eastern Conference. Are they better than the Boston Celtics? I'm going to say yes, because I believe in their, I believe at their center position, Bam is big time. I still have question marks about, you know, obviously Robert Williams has been solid for the Boston Celtics. Taco Fall maybe is waiting in the shadows. Enes Kanter is still going to eventually play. Dennis Theis, but I don't love what they have at the center position. And then overall, as you mentioned, Jack, the depth of the Miami is just very good. I mean, Goran Dragic coming off the bench. You have Tyler Harrow playing very well. This guy, Duncan Robinson's been solid. Obviously, you found something in Kendrick Nunn that no one else was expecting. There hasn't been any Deion Waiters, which is a little bit, to me, surprising, but he was already suspended at one point for some not coming into camp as ready or whatever the case may be. James Johnson. And then Jimmy Butler. I mean, this is the ideal situation for Jimmy Butler. You know, he's clearly like the guy, but the guy in the sense of he's going to do whatever it takes to win. Maybe that's going to be playing point guard for them or more or less facilitating. The guy is a lockdown defender, still rebounds. He's just playing in the most like comfortable situation I've seen him play in, because there's other guys on this team he can rely on scoring wise. Spoelstra is just obviously a fantastic head coach. We've gone over this year after year. Jimmy Butler's just the perfect kind of obviously, we know he's got like an ego and can be tough, but like he just fits what any team wants. Like, if you need a clear cut, maybe not number one, because I don't think he is a number one guy, but clear cut number two guy, Jimmy Butler is that. And you can see with a complete team what somebody like Jimmy Butler can put into a system like Miami.
And just another thing with Butler, he just kind of fits the identity of Miami so well. Just like that toughness, they're always trying to bring the energy and the hustle. And that's one thing that really sticks out with the Heat. Like Jack mentioned, this is super early, but based off what we've seen from both teams, you'll feel a little bit more confident about the Heat, especially because they got a couple wins without Jimmy Butler even playing. And Corey mentioned Bam, who's been a monster. Second in assists in terms of centers in the NBA right now, with just over five.
But and I just want to, like, just to piggyback, like tonight, for example, no Justice Winslow and no Bam. They start Miles Leonard and they still, you know, mollywop the Houston Rockets.
Bam played tonight.
Did he? Oh, he did play tonight. Yeah. Oh, he played. Oh, he only, oh, my fault. My fault. He only played.
Everybody had little minutes because there was a blowout from the start. But you mentioned Deion Waiters. I think that's interesting. And it's the fact he didn't play tonight. I don't know when he's going to play.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's Waiters Island is turning into a very, very.
The tide is getting high.
Oh, there we go. Corey got some beach puns for me. I was gonna put one in there. But it's a deep and dark destination in the summer. It's a bit stormy over there. But you know, James Johnson, he played tonight at all, Nick.
Yeah, he did. He did play some minutes. Played well. I think they were solid minutes too.
Yeah, so I think he was in a similar boat to Deion Waiters in the fact that they weren't in quality enough conditioning. Obviously, the Miami Heat hold their guys to an incredibly high standard, and it is why they perform the way they do. And in a weakened Eastern Conference, the Miami Heat are going to do some damage, and they already started so far. And I think that come towards the latter points of the season, you'd think that they'd be in good shape because they just have such a good fitness base behind them. You know, a lot of other teams, plus the depth that they have. You know, come the point end of the season, this Miami Heat team could get some home court advantage. Obviously, we are only a week and a half into the season, but, you know, why not throw some takes out there?
Yeah, the depth is really good. And just to clarify on Deion Waiters, I believe he was actually suspended for some behind-the-scenes stuff, not about conditioning. Right. I think not being happy about his role because I don't think he was going to start or something like that, and he thought he had a really good camp. But whatever it is, they have Dragic coming off the bench, Kelly Olynyk off the bench, and James Johnson's going to play well for them. That'd be big, too. And obviously Tyler Hero. So they have a lot of different options for Miami. But the next group is going to be three teams. You tell me which ones you feel most confident about. It's going to be the T-Wolves, the Mavs, or the Suns.
I'm going with the Timberwolves because they have the best player out of those three teams. Kyle Anthony Towns got some ridiculous MVP buzz because of the way he was playing. I know we were on the brunt of that after the first game, Nick. He is just an absolute monster. And Ryan Saunders is finally utilizing his talents to the fullest of his ability. You know, obviously Tom Thibodeau was all about Jimmy Butler, but he is an otherworldly talent. I know he can just do so many things with the basketball in his hand. He's probably one of the best shooting 7-foot big men ever. You know, obviously he's a little bit taller than Dirk, but he is a pure center and he shoots the lights out and he takes a few attempts as well. It's not just off three or four a game. I think he's in that 5-7 range. He can pass the ball. And I think the defense has been simplified for him. And to have a healthy Robert Covington, I think that helps them tremendously. And, you know, you get the roller coaster ride experience of Andrew Wiggins. You know, he gets 11 points in a minute and wins you a fourth quarter. But Karl Anthony Towns is the fulcrum there. And, you know, they could be a sneaky little chance to get into the playoff picture there. But I really like them. And I think Karl Anthony Towns, to see that finally happening, you know, his potential is fully being realized. And, you know, my hot take at the start of the season for JBT that might actually happen was that Karl Anthony Towns could be the best center in the NBA. He's playing like it so far.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Obviously, Minnesota's been playing so well. I'm going to go with Dallas, though. We saw the epic showdown between Luka Doncic and LeBron James a couple nights ago. You know, Luka Doncic having a triple-double. His 10th, I believe it was. Well, he got number 11 tonight. And number 11 tonight was in big fashion as well. 29 points, 14 rebounds, 15 assists. I mean, the guy is an absolute star in the making.
History, by the way, Corey. Only the second player in NBA history with over 25 points, over 10 rebounds, and over 15 assists in back-to-back games.
Exactly. Well, there you go. History. The guy's a stud. And I think Porzingis, we've seen some flashes. I don't think he's just fully in game shape yet. I know people make jokes that Porzingis has got to be the luckiest guy to be as tall and gifty as with absolutely zero touch at the position. But he is still, I think, a star in the making. And the bench, even though I've been critical of this bench and I don't think it's very good, it's been solid. You know, Seth Curry shooting over 50%. Brunson's been good for them. Dorian Finney-Smith has been a reliable corner three option. Hardaway Jr. is streaky, but you get something out of him on certain nights. They've been solid. So for me, it's Dallas. I think the one thing about Minnesota is, yes, Karl-Anthony Towns is arguably the second best center right now, because I think he's played much better than Jokic to this point in time. You can make the case him and Embiid might be neck and neck. Maybe even it is Cat at this point.
Literally neck and neck. No,
no pun intended. But I don't know how much you can rely on, like, Jeff Teague, for example, shooting 51%, 34% from three, having some really good nights. Covington, I think you can rely on. Wiggins, you know, he, like you mentioned, Jack, 11 points can be a quick span, and he can give you nothing. Obviously, he's been better than of late. Some really clutch moments down the stretch, like Miami, for example. But I think I'm more sure of Luka and Porzingis than I am of Towns, because I don't know if the supporting cast I can truly trust yet in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Dallas as well, pretty much for the same reason, Corey. I think you have Luka, who obviously isn't as good as Towns yet, but Porzingis is definitely better than the second best player on Minnesota, and you feel more confident. I think the supporting cast, I think Dallas's bench has been pretty impressive. I like a guy like DeLon Wright and some of the names you mentioned on there too. So they'll continue to kind of get better. Or Minnesota, you're just unsure if Cat can carry this load the entire season because he doesn't necessarily have that, you know, sidekick. But any love for the Suns at all, why they should have a run at this? Or
Well, because Aaron Baines is the best center in the league, Nick. That's why you're the player you love to hate the most. Funnily enough, an Australian, so I'm going to call out some racism on it. But even though there is an Australian partly on this podcast and does a co-host the podcast with yours truly as well. No, I love the it's a fairy tale story. We've got a couple of Suns fans in the OTG network, and it's fun to see the underdog rise. It's almost symptomatic of what us Aussies love as well. We love the underdog story. You know, you could make a movie about this shit. I know that, you know, Giannis is getting a movie with Disney Plus. You know, if the Phoenix Suns make the playoffs, then Disney Plus or Netflix or Hulu or Stan, for my Australian listeners out there, better get involved and better call some director, because I reckon Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton with a little bit of a saga on the side, make a movie about those guys.
I mean, I think the Suns deserve a lot of love. Right. I mean, obviously, sitting at 4-2, they've taken care of business of the games they're supposed to win. You know, Devin Booker has kind of caught my eye as being, as Ricky Rubio has just really freed up Devin Booker. We've seen Devin Booker have to try and be like a playmaking scoring guard. Now with Ricky Rubio being the clear-cut point guard, it just lets Devin Booker play his own type of game, which is scoring the basketball. I still don't understand why Washington said, I'm good on Kelly Oubre. I don't understand. I think Kelly Oubre has continued to show that there's a lot to his game as he continues to develop. I love his athletic ability. You know, the jump shot's getting better. I think he can still hit some sort of 3-point shots. And then your guy Baines. I mean, we probably, like, I know Khalil, one of our writers who covers the Suns in the group chat, was mentioning if Baines isn't playing so well, you know, maybe, like, we're talking about the DeAndre Ayton suspension more if this team is, like, really bad. But DeAndre Ayton got suspended, and we don't even, like, think about it as, or question it because, you know, Baines has been so damn good for them.
He's better.
So I've been impressed by the Suns at this point in time. And Frank Tank, he's been pretty solid.
And, like, for the Suns, and I've heard people tweet this, and it does make a lot of sense, like, now they just have actual NBA players on the roster where they're putting on a starting lineup of solid guys. You look at Ricky Rubio, Devin Booker, Kelly Oubre, Dario Saric, you know, DeAndre when he's healthy or not suspended, and instead you have Aaron Baines. So there's actually, you know, good players in this team where in the past it was just an array of weird talent and guys trying to make a name for themselves in the NBA.
And we also have to give credit to Monty Williams.
Yeah.
You know, I think it also, it's been a circus, if you will,
Been a circus. No, you're right.
Circus is the right word.
It's been a circus of coaches, right? We keep seeing guys coming and going.
Merry-go-round?
Yeah, there we go. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Throw in the synonyms.
I'm not used to recording podcasts late at night. My brain goes to mush. But nonetheless, Monty Williams has done a great job so far in Phoenix. And I think that's been a big reason why we've seen the Suns kind of take this jump. It matters having a coach who knows what he's doing. obviously Monty Williams hasn't had a ton of like deep playoff success, but he's been known at least for his time with the Pelicans, getting teams in the right situation, at least moving forward.
Especially in such a bad culture in Phoenix where everything is so negative, trying to take a losing team into a winning or competitive team is really hard to do. But anything else you guys want to touch on until we get to the negative end?
Bring on the negatives.
All right. So this will be teams. Which one are you more down on after, you know, not a great start? Chicago Bulls or Orlando Magic?
The Bulls, because I had higher expectations of them. I think, and they have a lot of talent on their roster that I don't think is being utilized or it's not executing. You know, Thaddeus Young, Tomas Satoransky, these guys that picked up in the offseason, you know, you think would just elevate the Chicago Bulls, but it's the guys that are still there that aren't necessarily performing. You know, Larry Markkanen, Zach LaVine, a lot of these sort of guys, you know, Chris Dunn. I haven't minded Wendell Carter Jr.'s form, but they should be performing a lot better. And yes, they've had some, you know, minor losses and a close loss to the Knicks and the Hornets, but you know, those they shouldn't be in those situations in the first place. I guess it's a little bit rich coming from me, a Nets supporter who was in that situation against the Knicks themselves. But we at least pulled out the win. So I think, you know, Jim Boylan, you know, he's going to probably get those guys to clock in with their time cards again tomorrow. But it was weird because I think everyone was so... The style of basketball was changed to utilize them more. And Jim Boylan was like, yeah, we're going to run more and such. You know, Zach LaVine was on the Low podcast and saying how he was looking forward to it. And, you know, initially it took a while for him to warm to Jim Boylan. And now their relationship is solid. It's one step forward and two steps back, the Chicago Bulls. Obviously, you know, a lot can change with just a mini little run. And I think that they could get there. I think that the Chicago Bulls have enough talent on their roster that I think that they are going to be okay. And as for the Magic, you know, it all starts in the defensive end. You know, it's really nice to see, you know, Markel Fultz being a nice little story out there. But, you know, guys like Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac, who everyone is just so high on, it's going to be the next, you know, Kawhi Leonard. Some people were even comparing him to.
That's a little crazy.
I heard it. And, you know, people were talking about him as the most improved player. But they just have a lot of guys who play similar. And it's why I wasn't necessarily as high on them, because they're like a better version of the Knicks, because they have like 18 million power forwards, you know, Aaron Gordon, Al-Farouq Aminu, Jonathan Isaac, and then they've got, you know, Mo Bamba and Nikola Vucevic as well. So for me, the Magic have been disappointing, but I don't have that high of expectations for them, whereas I think the Bulls have a higher-ish ceiling because they've just got some nice talent. And, you know, Kobe White can be a bit erratic at times for the Bulls, but that's what you get with a point guard, a rookie point guard of his talents.
For me, I'm more disappointed in the Orlando Magic to this point in time. I think I had high expectations for them coming off a playoff appearance last year. The promise we saw of this young core in Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon, the flashes of Fultz in preseason. And they've just been sour. Aaron Gordon not shooting well. I think he's shooting under 30% he's back up to 40 finally from the field. Terrence Ross secured the bag, is now shooting 27% from the field, 19% from three. This was a guy who last year had the most three-pointers coming off the bench with like 217. We know this team has a defensive identity. That's what they kind of push themselves or they build themselves off of. And they just haven't really been able to stop teams. The other night, losing 123-91 to the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, the Magic just has some issues. Obviously, they can't score the basketball to a high degree with the guys on this roster. But if you're not stopping anybody, then it doesn't matter if your offense is subpar. You have to play some sort of defense. And I think I'm more disappointed in that. Because, like, the Chicago Bulls, I know that, like, Zach Lowe, for example, was like, 8th seed for the Bulls, paced out of the playoffs. Like, no, I just gotta let me get a little praise in here. The Pacers have won 3 in a row. I don't know if you guys know this. They won 3 in a row tonight. We even had Domantas Sabonis. We started had a guy who doesn't even know how to play defense really, and he still was able to put up a defensive effort. TJ Leaf had 13 rebounds against Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. And that team's gonna make the playoffs? No, I'm sorry, I don't see it. I don't buy it. It ain't happening.
Rant over.
I'm more disappointed in the Orlando Magic because I thought that they were starting to move stuff in the right direction. I do think Markel Fultz is very good. I'm glad he's finally getting some more minutes. And I love Jonathan Isaac defensively. But this team, just as you mentioned, Jack, there's just an abundance of guys who all kind of play the same position. So I wonder if maybe this is the year we see them kind of trade maybe Aaron Gordon perhaps. Maybe a little bit too early to say that, but it seems like there is something wrong with this team because they really do need someone who can go out there and get the bucket.
Yeah, maybe D'Angelo Russell's that guy. But I wasn't super high on either team, but I think Chicago is just playing so bad that I'm more down on them. I think Orlando might end up being fine. They played some good teams like the Raptors, the Bucks, the Nuggets. You don't really expect them to beat those teams anyways. Where Chicago just like doesn't look like a good basketball team at all. Like they finished last season pretty solid. And then going to this year, like Jack mentioned on the Lowe's podcast, Levine kind of talking up how they're going to play different and better. And they just look like a bad team. Like they don't look like they got any better. They don't look like a better team with having more veterans around. They're just disappointing. And you asked me like which team I think has a possibility of making the playoffs, it definitely wouldn't be the Bulls as of right now.
Yeah, but, I mean, Otto Porter Jr. sucks.
Yeah, he tweaked his ankle tonight, and he was already playing pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, for the year, he's shooting 29% from the field, or no, 34% from the field, 31% from three. Yes. He's been highly disappointed. And like the signing of Thaddeus Young, I mean, they just don't really play Thaddeus Young enough, I feel like. Like, I would get more minutes so you can actually have some sort of defensive impactful player on the court. But I get his lack of a three-point shot is probably why they don't play him.
But he was at points like the only one making plays for them tonight against the Pacers. So it's like, and it's weird because obviously they want to play Laurie, they want to play Wendell, and they're going to get big minutes. So where are you going to have 5 minutes for Thad Young? So interesting front office moves, as always, from the Bulls. But next two teams, Rockets or Nets?
Well, Nick, I'm going to go with the Nets because they're a team close to both of our hearts. And I think that I've had higher expectations of them. But I think you've mentioned this. I think I'm always more pessimistic than you when it comes to the Brooklyn Nets. I think there are some issues that need to be sorted out, and they need to be sorted out quickly. You know, everyone's calling this the gap year for the Brooklyn Nets because it's all waiting until KD comes back. But, you know, we need to correct some things before he does even, you know, put on the black and white. You know, I was lucky to sort of see him. You know, he was chatting to Rodion Skurutz and Janan Musa. You know, he was sitting down next to his best friend. He's dancing with Theo. So he's having a grand old time. But on the court, there's some issues. And I think a lot of it stems from the defensive end. A lot of it stems from guys like Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan and the bench. You know, I think Kyrie Irving is the only steady presence, which I think a lot of fans and probably some of our Celtics guys who are listening right now will be befuddled when they hear that. But trust me. And there was this clip going around about Kyrie Irving sort of yelling at DJ and Joe Harris. And I'm just like, really? You pick out one thing and then, you know, I think you go to that guy's Twitter page. He used to be a writer for like Celtics Hub or something. So surprise, surprise is there. But, you know, I think generally it is the Houston Rockets because they have much higher expectations. But, you know, it's a team close to my heart. And I'm hoping like hell. And that Detroit Pistons blow up and absolute kerfuffle was maybe one of the worst performances I've seen since I've been a Brooklyn Nets fan. That second half was disgusting, you know, with the capital D. And hopefully they can pull it together by tomorrow, by the time hopefully this pot is out. And, you know, I'll be smiling again. And, you know, maybe I'll be a little bit higher on them. But for now, so many issues and coaching has to do with it as well. Not a lot going right in Brooklyn. I guess that's probably the best way to sum it up.
Yeah, it's the Brooklyn Nets for me as well. I had them as a top four seed in the Eastern Conference. We saw them live the other day against the Pacers. There were some clear-cut issues there. You know, Spencer just hasn't been sharp. I watched the game last night, too, with the Pistons. Spencer just hasn't been as sharp. I think Kenny has made some questionable decisions at this point in time with when he chooses to put guys in, when he decides to take guys out. You know, I felt the way during the Pacers game that there wasn't enough touches for Kyrie late in that game. I know last night against the Pistons, which, you know, not to open wounds. I know you guys were over this in the Brooklyn Buzz. Definitely check out the Brooklyn Buzz. But for the fact of the matter is, I just lost my train of thought.
Karis Levert.
I knew I was going somewhere.
There Karis we go. Levert,
was, you know, they just didn't go to him. And I also thought when the game was slipping away after you guys had the, 16-point lead, 13-point lead, when the fourth quarter started or late in that third, I would have just put Kyrie in. I would have just put my best player in who was getting at least, even though Kyrie's shot wasn't falling himself, he was getting guys involved. You know, he had like, 6 or 7 assists at halftime. The offense was moving with him out there. I would have just put my best player out there to just to help get stuff back together. Because obviously the Pistons not having Derrick Rose, Reggie Jackson, or Tim Frazier, and not having Blake Griffin, seeing those guards out, I mean, this is a game where you would expect the Brooklyn Nets guard play to lead the way. and it just wasn't the case. Things just kind of fell apart in the second half, as you guys alluded to. I know you guys probably had the ultimate rant session on the Brooklyn Buzz.
Oh, yes, we did.
But it's been disappointing. The defense, obviously, as we mentioned, and you bring up that play about Kyrie yelling at teammates. It's gotten to the point now where the guy can't, like, first of all, I know Nick for sure is a very competitive person. I know I'm a competitive person. Jack, I'm just going to assume you're a competitive person. You stand up and yell when your team's struggling at a basketball game. So I know you're a competitive person.
Yep.
If my team is struggling and I see something I don't like or my player is supposed to do something else, I'm going to get frustrated and I'm going to show emotion. It doesn't mean I'm about to demand a trade or go, like, quiet for 2 weeks. But now we got this built-up Kyrie stigma that every time this guy shows a negative emotion, we have to press the panic button and try and make something out of it. It's absolutely ridiculous to act this way 7 games into the season. Now, may Kyrie turn the corner and go pure, like, don't bother me mode? Maybe. But let's not just assume it's going to happen 7 games in. I think that's an absurd thing to do. And it's growing tiring already. Like, Boston Celtics, like, they go to sleep and they pray that Kyrie starts the
animosity.
That? Yeah, yeah. It's formed some animosity in that locker room.
And essentially, you want your leaders, like, not like yelling, but telling him where he needs to go. It's a new team. All these pieces, they don't know the plays. They don't know where Kyrie likes the ball or whatever it is. You kind of expect that. And like you said, Corey, being a competitive person, you're going to get a lot loud on the court. It happens. But I feel fine about the Nets because I think they have so many new pieces and, like, a lot of things are correctable where Houston is just bringing mostly Russell Westbrook and their defense is so bad. Like, we just talked about how bad their defense is. Like, I think they're 29th defensive rating. And tonight against Miami, like, they didn't try. And there's a bigger question with their rotation because, like, they elect to go small and they can't really do anything with it. Where the Nets, I think, obviously, Detroit game was really bad, but I think they still have the piece on that roster if Kenny can get it together to kind of make that jump. But next two teams, Pelicans and Kings.
Well, I saw the Kings pull out a performance, you know, against the New York Knicks tonight, and I think it was more on the Knicks being bad than it was on the Kings being good. So I'm still not horribly, you know, confident with them. You know, Luke Walton has said that they've been trying to install their sort of run and gun sort of system, but they also had to temper it somewhat because of the India trip as well. But they look better, and, you know, maybe the Knicks are the team that they sort of kickstart their season with. The Pelicans, I think, you know, they've had some injury issues, you know, not having Jrue Holiday, Derek Favors, two of their most important players, and obviously Zion with the preseason injury. But they've had some positive signs, you know, with the likes of Brandon Ingram, who will probably be, you know, one of the leaders of the most improved player race right now. I think the most glaring thing about them is their defense, and Alvin Gentry isn't necessarily known for being a defensively minded coach. So I think for me, it would probably be the New Orleans Pelicans, but I don't think the expectations were as high for them. I think that they're just, neither team is in, I think, the worst rut. I think there are other teams who are worse off, but I think both of these teams will be still vying it out. I think they'll figure it out sooner rather than later. I do like the Kings' depth off the bench, so I think that I'm maybe slightly more confident in the Kings. So I'll go with the Pelicans, and I'm more worried about them.
I'm not so worried about the Pelicans. Because I didn't have giant expectations. I just expected them to be a competitive team, and I think they've been just that, you know, losing by less than 10 to the Raptors opening night, losing less than 10 but to the Mavericks, to the Rockets. They were in a lot of these games, beating the Nuggets. They're just not getting it done, and obviously some injuries. Jrue Holiday missed a couple games. Favors has missed some time. Obviously, we haven't seen Zion. Brandon Ingram got hurt last night. So I'm not so low on them, but, I mean, Sacramento, this was a team I had finishing on the bubble to make the playoffs in the West, and they just don't look great. Obviously, good win against the Jazz on Friday, good win tonight against a bad Knicks team. Besides Darren Fox and Buddy Hield, I just don't like what I see from Sacramento. Harrison Barnes, like, just feels like too much money. Bogdanovich, I kind of, like, understand why they didn't extend him.
He looked good tonight. He looked good tonight. I will defend Mr. Bogey, double B, B squared, because he looked good tonight. And I think he's going to be getting into some form. So, and I think because he is just the perfect sixth man off the bench. And, you know, I liked some of the things that they were doing. And, you know, Rashawn Holmes gives them good energy. He was starting for them. And, you know, the perfect backup, you know, veteran center, Dwayne Dedman, a guy who can just set some screens and hit the three ball. So maybe I'm overreacting because I did see them in person. It's not perfect. I agree with you, Corey, but I think there were higher expectations for the Kings. You know, De'Aaron Fox apparently pulled out of Team USA because he wanted to focus on the regular season, and then they start the season off like this. I don't think De'Aaron Fox has been amazing either. I think Buddy Hield's been a little bit better, but again, this is me basing off a performance that I saw just an hour ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Buddy Hield has definitely been better than De'Aaron Fox at this point. I mean, he's shooting 40 and 30 from the field and still getting his points. You know, I just, you know, like this, just the signings in general, like Trevor Ariza, looks like he's clearly taken a full step back, in my opinion. You signed Dwayne Dedmon for not big money, but he comes off the bench now, which just feels like a weird way to distribute your money, bringing in Corey Joseph for as much as they brought him in for. He only plays 11 minutes. You know, it's just some questionable offseason moves to where I thought they were going to be a little bit more competitive early. Obviously, I think they're going to be still a solid team, but I'm not as wowed by their roster and their depth as I was going into the year.
Yeah, I think you look at the Kings and the fact they got blown out in so many games early on, that's more disappointing. And then the Pelicans, I guess, have an excuse. Drew Holiday missed a couple games, and then Zion obviously hasn't played yet. So I think right now it's like a little bit more disappointing for the Kings. But Corey, I'm going to pass it over to you.
Okay, so we have, obviously, there's going to be some big name guys on the market. At least we anticipate around the deadline. I put together just a list of some names that I can envision being popped up in trade rumors. So we're just going to do a little, are there trade value up or is there trade value down type of game. First up on the list, Kevin Love.
Way up on Kevin Love. I've always been a Kevin Love stan. Funnily enough, in the offseason, I was watching like a lot of his YouTube videos with like men's health and stuff, and the dude got cut. He's a very sexy man from the chubby kid he was at UCLA, but I think he's second in the league in rebounding, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he's shooting the ball well. You know, it's not necessarily the Kevin Love of old because, you know, he is in the twilight years of his career, but, you know, I think, you know, his trade value is increasing, but it's still the contract at the end of the day. Again, I'm going to put it out there because it was the hottest take. No, it wasn't the hottest take, but it was a hot take for both of you saying it would be one of the worst contracts in the league. I think it's a bad contract, but I don't think it is as horrible as a few other ones out there right now. I think it's up, and again, I'll bring it up. I think I brought this up on the outlet maybe nearly every time I've been on. Portland, get on the phone with Mr. Who was it? Kobe Altman, who was extended the other day, which is funny.
I think the most important thing for Kevin Love is maintaining health, and obviously 6 games in, no injury, and also he's playing efficiently, which was kind of an issue the last few seasons, especially the team being so bad, but he's shooting, I think, 49% from the field, 41% from three, and like Jack mentioned, killing it on the boards, and also starting to rack up some assists too.
Yeah, a couple of near triple-double performances. I just want to say, the take about his contract being the worst is really strictly about the fact that I don't believe he can stay healthy, and to this point in time, we're like Nick kind of mentioned and when he said 6 games in, he's been healthy. So we're just 6 games in. It's a long season. Obviously, I hope he stays healthy. But that, you know what I'm saying? That take isn't terrible yet because last year, obviously, he was banged up and so was he the year before.
Not at all, mate. I'm an optimist. I want to be more
positive. You're an optimist unless it's considered the Brooklyn Nets and you're a pessimist, which I find very odd.
Correct. It's a fatalistic way of looking at life, Nick.
You temper your expectations.
You temper your expectations for your own team so that you can be slightly surprised. It's how you live, you know. You want to sort of be welcome surprise. I'm sure you're similar with the paces. Like if you were doing, you know, full access paces, then I'm sure you'd have some similar stuff. When you rant with Jay on full access hoops, you know, the first episode, you were an upset man, and that's fair. It's fandom.
I think Corey's closer to me. He picked the Pacers, what, third in the East, right?
Yeah, I think I picked them third, and I had the Nets fourth.
So, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, Jack, maybe you just hate your own team.
All right. I've hosted the Brooklyn Buzz for a while now, mate. Let's ease it up a little bit.
All right.
No, but back to the Kevin Love contract. I mean, I think as a cap is raised, it's gotten not as bad, but obviously maintaining health is the most important thing. I still don't think, like, when they trade the contract, they're going to get any, like, great asset back. It'll just be a movable deal if he's healthy, which he is right now and playing efficiently, which is great for him.
Next up, Clint Capella.
Oof. That sound bite from Nick right there. You can play that a million times. It essentially sums up Clint Capella's season. When I went to watch the Rockets game, which the Nets thankfully won, I don't remember him doing anything. Like, I don't remember him getting a rebound. I don't remember him getting a dunk. I think he might have got one dunk in front of him.
And he had two oops the entire game.
Yeah, and I was like, isn't this your bread and butter? Like, the James Harden, Clint Capella pick and roll is almost like one of the more, you know, nasty plays. It was almost the old school Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams pick and roll. He has been very, very poor. And, you know, he's locked up some money for himself. You know, I'll throw it at you guys. I would rather have Kevin Love on my roster right now on the money that he's on than Clint Capella the money that he is on. Yes, Clint Capella's on about $19 million, I think, per annum. And I think Kevin Love's closer to that $30 million. I think Kevin Love's is decreasing as well. I'm not 100% sure. I have to look into that. But, yeah, Clint Capella has been not trash, but, again, I like to make this comparison. He's been compost.
Yeah, Capella definitely is down. His contract's at 16.8, but ascending. And I believe Love's goes up to 31 and then drops down to 28 in the last year of the deal. But Capella has not been good for them. And I don't know if it's him or just the entire team or now having, you know, Westbrook and Harden kind of getting away from him sometimes and maybe Harden going to that step back like we mentioned too much earlier in the show.
Yeah, I think it's down as well. Steven Adams is the name. Steven Adams, trade value up or down? I think these guys are very similar what they bring to a team. I think Adams, a little bit more vocal, a little bit more of a leader and better locker room guy. But what is the trade value for Steven Adams?
I'll just throw this out there real quick about Clint Capella. I think if he maybe was straight into another situation that he might end up playing better, that just like in Houston, things are in a real funk. But you never know because he's relied so much on the oops from Chris Paul and James Harden.
And right. I think they were also
let him do.
Yeah, and I think as well also, he was rumored so often in trade rumors in the offseason. Yeah. Relating to everyone, and that can only have a negative effect on, you know, an individual state of mind. And, you know, if you're not desired or feel valued within a team, why are you going to want to produce it? And he's got his money locked up at the end of the day. Obviously, I think the team situation, everything that's sort of happening there. But when it comes to Steven Adams, you know, Steven Adams is worth every penny and dollar for his tattoos and facial hair and hair. No, like, we don't even need to talk about his on-court production. And now he gets to rebound and such. I think Steven Adams can be, he's like 26 or 27 years old, but he plays like a 35-year-old. So I think he just has a lot of wear and tear in his body. If I was a team, I would love to have Steven Adams. But again, he's on somewhat of an inflated contract. I don't think he's worth that. But he is one of the best rebounders in the league. He is incredible in the pick and roll. And I think he's probably one of the best screeners in the league. I think Jimmy Butler said that like he hates being screened by him. He's like one of the most physical screeners going around. And I like his sort of little down low game. And again, the personality, how can you not love Steven Adams? He's just a marvelous, marvelous man.
Yeah, I would say his trade value is probably down right now. Obviously, Jack mentioned the other things that are great, but his actual on-court play, only 6 points a game, 31% from the field. And you mentioned that contract, 25.8 mil. No, I'm not really trying to push to make the move for Steven Adams. And I think Jack mentioned he plays more like a 35-year-old. That mobility isn't necessarily amazing.
Yeah, sticking with the Thunder, Chris Paul. I got to watch a full game last night. And got to be honest, almost felt like Chris Paul wasn't out there. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander really kind of takes the spotlight for that team. Chris Paul is still, like, he can still play at a high level. But I was surprised at how much, like, it's clear that he's not who he once was, at least offensively. Can still play and make for sure, but it's a different Chris Paul for sure, in my opinion. So what do you guys think on his trade value?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's steady. I think it's obviously down if you're looking at production, but I think the situation is not asking Chris Paul to do more. You know, they're running the show through Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and that is the right thing to do. And I think he's going to learn a lot from Chris Paul from however long he's there. I don't know where this rumor started, but I saw someone bring up a rumor for Chris Paul to Dallas, and I was like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. And then, you know, there was a Milwaukee one as well, which I think makes a little bit more sense. And obviously the Miami one has lingered ever since the preseason. So I think if Chris Paul is traded, when he is traded, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later, I think he will prove his trade value. Even though the contract is, you know, probably out of the ones that was spoken about so far, probably the worst, because a short point guards, we know, don't age very well. Despite the fact that Chris Paul is always going to have effort, he's always going to be a solid-ish defender, and he can shoot. So maybe he won't age as poorly as some other, you know, less than 6 foot point guards. But I think the situation isn't asking for him much now. And I think that we will see. He's going to have his moments when the situation calls for it.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Jack. I think it's pretty steady where it's like not really going to change unless he goes to another team. But you mentioned the contract, 38.5 this year, then 41.3 next year. He's probably worth maybe $20 million next year, and now you're going to be paying him that much. It'll kill your cap. So I think he's steady in terms of that, but still that contract's going to be extremely hard to move.
Keeping with the Thunder for one more guy.
You hate this team.
It's fun. Well, watching last night, this is a team that, I mean, if they want to push for a playoff spot, they can definitely do that with a mix of veterans and young guys. But at the end of the day, I think you want to try and trade these veterans, at least while, like, for example, the next guy, Danilo Gallinari, a guy who has struggled with health issues in the past, was really good last year for the Clippers, all NBA worthy. Once again, I think he's off to a good start. But, you know, if this Thunder team wants to go into a different direction, these are the kind of guys you use to get more assets. What is the trade value for Gallinari?
Yeah, it's higher. It's another guy that I've been a stan of. I remember doing a Clippers preview with you guys. Again, you guys were quite low on the Italian. I continue to stan.
We missed the entire season after we did it, so we felt pretty good.
Yeah, you were right on our takes. I stand by that take.
It was a long play, mate. It was a long play.
Blake Griffin got traded.
It was a long play, and he's on a different team now.
Galaxy brain thinking, my friends. You know, 2 years into the future, I was previewing 2 years ahead for Mr. Gallinari. But, you know, I think the rumor that's been making the rounds now and seems to be, you know, really heating up is that the Portland Trailblazers should trade for him. And I think that makes a heap of sense. Obviously, if you're looking at, you know, comparing Danilo Gallinari and Kevin Love, I think Danilo Gallinari is a safer bet, partly because he's on a lesser contract, partly because I think both of them have health concerns. I don't think Danilo Gallinari plays 70 games rarely across his career, but Danilo Gallinari is at least an expiring contract, so you don't necessarily need to have him for the long haul, whereas you would be investing a lot into Kevin Love. And, you know, I think Danilo Gallinari, you know what you get out of him. He's a really good three-point shooter. He can be a net negative on the defensive end, but he can just create well. He's absolutely lethal, and, you know, can play some small ball five, I reckon, even as well at times if you have a Yusuf, him alongside Yusuf Nurkic, I think would be a really nice little tandem. So I think some teams will be picking up the phone to OKC. Not that they need some more picks, but, you know, you can always add to the collection.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's up, and he's a perfect kind of complimentary piece, especially to a guy like Dame or CJ or whatever kind of contender comes calling. And like Jack mentioned, the expiring contract makes him attractive as long as he can maintain health.
Definitely. All right, so two more. Goran Dragic is the next guy up from the Miami Heat. Obviously, the Heat may look just to keep him, but it feels like with their roster compilation that maybe they will look to move on from Dragic. Obviously, has dealt with some health issues. He's finally healthy this year. Trade value up or down?
Say that one again.
Goran Dragic.
It's a hard one because I haven't really seen much of him in the games that I've watched the Miami Heat with, but it's not, you know, Kendrick Nunn starting over him, but I think Goran Dragic could provide value to a team like the Dallas Mavericks. I think obviously having an established relationship with the guy.
Almost traded there.
Yeah, very, very close to being traded there in the offseason. I think, you know, he'd be a better sort of backup guard than a DeLon Wright, a more pure point guard anyway. And I think he could be a nice token starter for them too. So I think his value has probably gone down via production, but I don't think he's lost any of it because we don't necessarily have the highest expectations of Goran Dragic anymore.
Yeah, I actually think his trade value is going up. I like the way he's played off the bench for Miami, and he's really bought into that role where sometimes a veteran point guard might be like, all right, you're not even going to let me start on this team and not necessarily play to their best ability. But he's looked good, and he looks healthy too, and I think that's a big plus for him. Last year, he just didn't look right.
Yeah, I mean, just to put it into perspective, he is averaging 16, 3, and 4 off the bench on shooting splits of 46, 38, and 71.
Very nice.
So he's definitely having a solid start to this season. Last up, and this is kind of, you guys can just pick. The New York Knicks, as we know, have a lot of guys on this roster. The way they've started this year playing, it feels like there's going to be a move or two in the future. Who do you think has the highest trade value as of right now in the New York Knicks?
Marcus Morris.
Okay, I was going to say, in terms of guys that, like, obviously they're going to trade, they're not going to trade any of the young players.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it's Marcus Morris.
Yeah, I agree with Jack. Marcus Morris has probably been one of the only, like, guys that's a non-young core player that's played well. So I would say him. Even Julius Randle's been pretty bad. Bobby Portis had, like, one good game. And maybe Wayne Ellington has some value for them. He had a couple, like, hot moments, but he hasn't really played a ton either.
I think Marcus Morris would be almost the perfect guy to get for the Brooklyn Nets, which I would have to delete a few old tweets of mine, but I would rather have him on my roster than not. You know, he was the only guy tonight that was able to create efficient offense for himself. The only guy out of those power forwards that can actually shoot a three competently.
Yeah.
He's a good rebounder. You know, I think he was their leading scorer. You know, he doesn't have to play 45 minutes like RJ Barrett does to be effective and produce. You know, to me, he's almost their most consistent player. So, and I think a lot of teams would be more than happy to go after him. And it would be very unlikely that the Knicks do a deal with the Nets, but Sean Marks will surely pick up the phone.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. And that's going to wrap it up for trade up and trade down, or trade value going up or down.
I like it. We definitely have to touch back on that segment every kind of month because it seems like it fluctuates so much. But let's talk games of the week. Now, starting off with Monday night, what game are you looking forward to?
Monday night. Let me get my schedule up. Have to open up my tabs. Monday night, we got I think I'll go with probably the safe bet. I'll go with Milwaukee, Minnesota. Was that Tuesday?
No, that's Monday.
Okay, yeah, Milwaukee, Minnesota.
What about you, Corey?
That would probably be the game I go to as I lean on as well. Although I do think there is some intrigue with your guys, Pelicans and Nets, because I think that's going to be a lot of offense. But yeah, I wasn't really thrilled by about any games on Monday, but Tuesday and Wednesday got my attention.
Yeah, Monday's not necessarily a great slate, but Karl-Anthony Towns will be back, right? So Bucks versus T-Wolves makes a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Will he be back?
That's he's missed. I thought this would be the second game that he misses.
Okay, so if that's the case, then I'm going with New Orleans, Brooklyn. If there's no cat, then I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, I don't think I didn't think there was a cat. That's why I didn't think Monday was interesting at all.
Yeah, Philadelphia and Phoenix could kind of be maybe okay.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Phoenix tweeted out. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say because you did the little retweet for it. I'm like, they're ready to knock Philadelphia off their undefeated start. And have New Orleans won a game yet?
One.
They have. Yep. They won one game, yep.
Okay.
The Nuggets, good. I believe.
All right, good. Because I don't like going up against undefeated teams. You know, it happened to us against the Indiana Pacers, and they were motivated.
It's just because I'm there. Don't worry about it.
It's just your presence. Your presence, your doppelganger presence is what lost the Knicks the game tonight as well. But, I think that game as well, I'm oddly nervous about it because it'll be my birthday Australian time, and if the Nets don't win on my birthday, then that is some bad juju.
You get to celebrate twice in that case.
To an extent, yeah, I'll probably get like all the birthday messages from back home in Australia, and then the next day I get to celebrate here and smash some Shake Shack and a heap of Dunkin' Donuts or something.
There you go. But Tuesday, I think we'd all probably agree on this one. The top matchup is Miami versus Denver.
That's what I had down.
For sure. It's interesting to see one of the top East teams versus one of the top West teams. I can't talk tonight. I don't understand what's happening.
You can't deal with this late night run. Jack Maybe and I are experienced like this.
There's some Freaky Friday sort of stuff happening with a doppelganger. He is now the one on the podcast, and it's not the real Corey. We got doppelganger.
He's from the future, and the fact that he's in the same time zone as me, it's messing up my my brain.
Love the sci-fi. Love it.
Okay, now on to Wednesday. What are we looking at as the top matchup? There's a couple good games this night.
There is. I think I'll go with Milwaukee and the Clippers.
Milwaukee Clippers. I mean, both nights, Tuesday and Wednesday, the Pacers play. so if you like seeing the Pacers play, I do. Against the Hornets and Wizards, then maybe you'll be interested. But yeah,
two awesome teams to watch against.
Yeah, I think Milwaukee, the Clippers are the team to watch, but the game to watch, but also, like, no honorable mention, Sixers Jazz. I mean, I think both those games are really intriguing.
Yeah, you got Gobert going up against Embiid, and then in the Bucks and Clippers, you got obviously Kawhi and Giannis. I'm gonna go with Clippers and Bucks though, because those two guys are competing for literally the best player in the NBA. But over to Thursday night, what are we rolling?
Low key, before we get to that, then Nick, I think Chicago Atlanta has some intrigue to it because these are the two teams that everyone's sort of earmarked to be that sort of fringe young contender. So I think that there might be some intrigue there, and I think it might get some eyeballs onto that game.
Yeah, if Trey plays too, I think it gives him more pop. Even if he doesn't, though, I think Atlanta's been, like, when Trey is healthy, probably substantially better than Chicago. But to Thursday, what are we rolling with?
I think for me, this one is Portland and the Clippers.
I'm covering the late games Thursday night for OTG Basketball on Twitter, and I can tell you that I picked the late game because it's Blazers-Clippers.
We'll just give a quick shout-out to Celtics-Hornets because of the storyline here. Kemba Walker returning to Charlotte, and then obviously Terry Rozier, but Portland and LA is going to be the real matchup.
Hey, Miami Phoenix could be spicy too.
Yeah, you could. I mean, we'll kind of find a lot out about Phoenix as this week progresses. If they get a couple more wins, it'll be like, okay, maybe this team is actually kind of good. But Friday night, we got a packed slate. What are you rolling with?
There is so many games, it is hard to keep up with. I like the Miami Heat LA Lakers matchup.
I mean, I like the Pacers of Detroit, I want to say. I mean, I think honorable mention.
He snuck in on the Pacers like four or five times in the show.
They play a lot this week. We won three in a row, okay? It was dark days. We won without DeMontis Sabonis and Miles Turner. Let me just say that again. I went personally, though, with Milwaukee Bucks Utah Jazz as my game of the week.
I'll go with Philly versus Denver and Bede versus Jokic.
No one's showing love to Cleveland, Washington?
No.
Unfortunately, no.
Cleveland's been a little bit more competitive than expected, though.
Although,
I'd shout out Nets versus Blazers because we have Kyrie versus Dame.
I was going to say, we also have Pelicans-Raptors, which is a opening night rematch, too. It's a Friday night's a really good night of basketball.
Yeah, there's more than one good game. Hopefully, we don't get any more blowouts like we saw with Houston, Miami, and Sacramento, New York. But Saturday night, what are you guys rolling with?
Saturday night, I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch any basketball because it's my flight back to Australia. So I can't pick anything here, guys.
I mean, I'm more so on like the take Saturday night off, and you're not really missing much probably. but if you're looking for some sort of intriguement, I think, you know, Celtics Spurs.
By far the best game.
By far the most competitive game, yeah.
And both teams are off to solid starts, so it's actually like some good basketball, but. That's it for games of the week. Obviously, we're going to try to do this maybe every week, if not every other week. Guys, any other thoughts you want to get out there?
Please, Brooklyn, win for the sake of the fact that I've traveled thousands and thousands of kilometers, miles, whatever unit of measurement you would like to use. I'm paying good money. You know, just win the game of basketball. I don't need a happy affair. I don't need it to be beautiful basketball. I don't need passes and central. I don't need a Kyrie Irving game winner. I just need a win. Just win. I'm desperate.
Give him his birthday gift. Corey, anything you want to throw on there?
No, I'm happy that we have, you know, I just want to say this for 2 seconds. I saw an article, a New York Times article, and I tweeted it the other night. And it said, some guy wrote basically saying the NBA isn't very much fun right now. And I have to say.
Why? I don't understand.
That must be the most old guy staring at, yelling at Cloud's take I've ever seen in my entire life. The NBA is very fun right now. I do not feel that way. Yes, the Warriors have some injuries. We've seen a fight, which apparently is somehow a negative. But this has been an extremely enjoyable first 2 weeks of the season, and I can't wait to see what else happens over the course of these next, three, four months.
Yeah, and it's been a really weird start, which has made it extremely fun with some of these bad teams, like, really popping off, and obviously Steph being hurt sucks, but it's not like there aren't plenty of other amazing players in the NBA. But as always, you can check out the outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Peace out, knuckleheads.